This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Glad you could join me today. In this half hour, we'll have the final installment of our series of stories about refugees in Virginia, as well as a tour of the newly filled capacity Ragged Mountain Reservoir near Charlottesville, plus a Spark conversation you won't want to miss. But first, we sampled the voices of some hardcore voters last Tuesday, and by hardcore, I mean the minority of registered voters who actually get out and participate in the primaries. Last Tuesday was Super Tuesday, and Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump won their respective contests in the Old Dominion. With particularly energetic turnout on the GOP side, three of our reporters fanned out over the WMRA region on Tuesday to hear what voters had to say. We start out with Christopher Clymer Kurtz at a rural polling station north of Harrisonburg.
Edom Precinct District 2 Chief Mary Sue McDonald said that four of the precinct's over 2,000 active registered voters were waiting and ready when the doors opened at 6 o'clock. By 6:30, 11 Republican and 7 Democrat ballots had been cast.
It's already been steady.
This area will provide good voter turnout.
One early morning voter was Jerry Holsapple, a professor at Eastern Mennonite University. He doesn't always vote in primaries, but felt that this was an important one.
We have a great diversity in our country that we could value and lift up, or we can decide we don't want to be diverse.
Fred Eberle, District 2 Supervisor for the Rockingham County Board of Supervisors, was there too. He said that this election...
It has interesting players, and a lot of them aren't acceptable.
Broadway High School history teacher Jennifer Ennis brought her two children, Madison and Jordan, along with her, as is her tradition.
I'm just really excited that a lot of people are passionate about the primaries this year.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer Kurtz.
I'm Jesse Nadler. The scene outside Faith Mountain Baptist Church, one of the polling places in predominantly Republican Rockridge County, is pretty subdued. Eight or nine cars line the gravel driveway, with more vehicles trickling in sporadically. Two of the vehicles have Rebel Flag bumper stickers on them.
We've had a pretty good turnout today. It's pretty steady.
Eleanor Dorsey is the chief of this precinct, which has about 800 registered voters. It's the first time she's overseen an open primary.
I don't know how the percentage is Democrat, Republican. We won't know that till tonight.
This is the first primary Patrick Wonsell has been able to participate in due to his absentee status as a member of the military. He had wanted to vote for Rand Paul. Wonsell's big issue?
Fiscal security of the United States government. My preferred candidate already dropped out, so I've been at a loss for who to vote for and just the chaos that's ensued.
For Maggie Debbies, her main sticking point is right to life.
Everyone who is in a crisis pregnancy, we must support them and support them through that pregnancy and afterwards. Still, the issue of life is a great, great, huge issue.
She wouldn't tell me who she voted for, and neither would voter Thomas Grismacher.
I'm a citizen. It's my job to vote.
But he would say what ranks highest on his list of national priorities.
National security. ISIS and all of the other radical, fanatical Islamic groups out there are a total threat to Western civilization and to all human beings who do not adhere to their beliefs.
For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
I'm Emily Richardson Lorente. The playground at Woodbrook Elementary School in Charlottesville is hopping with kids. It's election day, so school's out. And 6-year-old Katie Metz is proudly sporting an I voted sticker. Although she didn't really. But her dad Josh did.
I feel fairly confident about the choice I made. I'm more worried about the choices that others will make. I identify as a moderate conservative, but there's absolutely no viable conservative candidate this year. So
rather than sit out the vote, this registered Republican voted for Bernie Sanders.
I felt that it was more important to lend my support to a strong Democratic candidate than against a bad Republican candidate.
There's no easy way to tell how many voters here may be flipping sides, but we can tell how many have asked for Democratic ballots versus Republican ones.
I'd say it's about 50-50.
Floyd Wood is the election chief here.
Turnout so far has been moderate to heavy. I think it's going to be a pretty good day.
Mara and Derek Frazier are here voting with their 4-month-old baby.
I've been a Hillary supporter for years, even when she was running against Obama.
She's got good experience, good resume. It's not exciting, like with President Obama, but, you know, she'll definitely make a good president, I think.
What do you think of the Republican choices?
Absolute joke, every single one of them. They're just a bunch of buffoons up there. It's very difficult to watch their debates.
Republican Ray Cadell has actually met Donald Trump a few times, but he decided to vote for John Kasich anyway.
Of all of them, he's the one standing the most above the fray.
For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson Lorente.
Residents of Charlottesville and Albemarle County won't have to worry about a drought draining the water supply anytime soon. It took 2 years to fill and several years of planning. But now, Ragged Mountain Reservoir has reached its capacity, and the rivers and streams around Charlottesville are protected as well. WMRA's Britt Moore reports.
A drought back in 2002 was the catalyst.
The community had to make some real sacrifices. I mean, it wasn't just having to stop watering your lawn or washing your car, but we had to go to measures like the restaurants, you know, were forced to stop using their dishwashing machines, and so they had to go to paper plates. They had to stop using their bathrooms, so they had to go to a porta potty out in the back.
Brian Richter with the Global Water Program of the Nature Conservancy. He says that's when the community was forced to think of a way to make sure it never happened again.
And ultimately, the solution that emerged was this idea of enlarging Ragged Mountain Reservoir to provide more water storage capacity.
A multi-million dollar project that would take years of planning, debate, and even some pushback is finally complete.
So now we've assured the safety of people downstream of the reservoir and expanded the supply to assure our future needs.
Tom Frederick is the executive director of the Rivanna Water and Sewer Authority. For this project, the authority worked with the Nature Conservancy's Richter not just to secure the area's water needs, but also to preserve local waterways. Several groups working together to make sure the upgrade is worth it in the long run.
The Ragged Mountain Reservoir holds 1.5 billion gallons.
That's enough to provide water for several months, even if there's another drought, which means people living in Charlottesville and Albemarle County won't have to worry about eating on paper plates at restaurants anytime soon. Most importantly, with the new reservoir expansion, the community wanted to make sure local rivers didn't suffer, and that's why the Nature Conservancy got involved.
We wanted to find a solution that would help bring our local rivers back to life.
Finding that balance between securing a water supply and making sure the local rivers stay in good shape was tricky.
There's a lot of water that gets diverted out of the Mormons River in particular, but also out of the main part of the Rivanna River for our use in the city and in the county. And when we take too much water out of a river, we can damage the health of the river. We can have an effect on the fish and the insects and everything else that uses the river.
Now, the Rivanna Water and Sewer Authority will be able to adjust just how much water is released into local rivers and when to do so. RWSA officials and conservationists hope that will protect the treasured water supply for people living in Charlottesville and Albemarle County and in turn preserve the landscape and recreational beauty that attract people to the area. For WMRA News, I'm Britt Moore.
In the final installment of our series on refugees in Virginia, WMRA's Jordy Yeager takes a look at the next wave of refugees set to arrive in Charlottesville this year and some of the people getting ready to help them.
About 20 minutes north of Charlottesville, there's a tiny church with a red door that sits on a quiet backcountry road in the far reaches of Albemarle County. Shortly before noon every Sunday, about a dozen cars fill the gravel parking lot. A shuttle bus filled with people empties out, and the church comes to life. Nearly 70 women, children, and men pack the 12 pews of the African Lighthouse Baptist Temple. They clap, they dance, and they sing.
I would say probably majority of the people are refugees, three-quarter.
Pastor Peter Chege is a Kenyan immigrant who's devoted much of his life to helping refugees, especially those from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We do have a big, significant number of refugees, but they struggle hard. They have a lot of basic needs. They have left people back in refugee camps, so they are caught between two worlds.
The International Rescue Committee, or IRC, has resettled more than 175 Congolese refugees in Charlottesville over the last 3 years. Refugees often come in waves as human rights groups try to empty out and close down camps altogether by permanently resettling the displaced migrants. Myrna Dickey, who works as a family support coordinator for the IRC, says Charlottesville's next big wave is expected to be more Congolese.
The Congolese come in two varieties, if you will. One is intact families, some of whom have been highly educated, leading professional lives, and those families, I think, are going to have an easier time. And then the others that we're seeing are a lot of single moms with either young children or multiple children of all ages.
In some of those cases, the children's father is one of the 5.5 million people who've been killed during the 2 decades of war in the region. Just to give you a sense, that's more people killed than the entire population of South Carolina. And for 500,000 Congolese, their survival has meant fleeing their homes, often finding refuge in camps in neighboring countries where education is limited, malnutrition is rampant, and sexual assault and rape are common. Suffice it to say, the Congolese face some of the biggest challenges of all refugee groups. They arrive in Charlottesville with severe medical and mental trauma issues. Most don't speak English, few have ever driven a car, and 1 in 5 don't read or write in their own language. But 96% of them are Christian.
Some of the immediate things that we would do is offer a community of believers, a community of people of like language and customs, where they could meet together.
Pastor Chege has driven a taxi for most of the 10 years he's been in the U.S. It's decent money, he says. But what's more, he gets to meet really interesting people. That's how we first came into contact with Congolese refugees in Charlottesville. And he realized he needed to help them.
We started helping with the phones. We would help them as a church, even as a family. I happen to have T-Mobile, big family plan where I can have 5 family lines for $100. So I have given numerous people phones, for some for a year, some for 3 months, some for 6 months. And then that became a part of our church ministry.
While driving his taxi one day several years ago, Chege picked up an American woman named Faith Painter. For 30 years, she'd run the Blue Ridge chapter of the Multiple Sclerosis Society. When she retired, she reached out to Chege, and together they raised $120,000 to buy the Barbersville Church. There's much more to be done, though, especially with this next wave of Congolese refugees coming soon. So they're planning to raise another $150,000 to expand the ministry's reach this year.
We know we need to do fundraising to have a crisis disbursement program to get people over a hump, not for ongoing assistance. But definitely there are times when people need financial assistance, and so we're looking to raise money for that.
Working with the IRC, the church has helped more than 50 refugees get jobs. They serve as a reference for employers, help with interview skills and childcare. They teach the Congolese how to drive. They've gotten cars and bikes donated for refugee families, blankets, pots and pans, mattresses, you name it. But there's so much more. For instance, in Virginia, if you're not able to graduate from high school by the time you turn 22, your only option is a GED.
And one of the other problems that I have seen is younger men who have come, and they get here, they are told they are overage. They cannot go to school. They have to do GED, and it is very, very difficult. So basically they drop off and they have to do very menial tasks. So that is something that can be addressed.
As refugees struggle with the wide array of challenges that life in a new country poses, many of them find support and solace with new friends at places as off the beaten path as a tiny church with a red door in a quiet part of Virginia. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. Meet Batesville resident and musician, Emily Gary.
I knew at a one-digit age that I wanted to have music in my life in some way, forever. And I do feel lucky in that I have gotten to work with music, be a musician in many different ways.
In 2004, Emily and her singing partner, Tom Prout, started working with publisher Amy Gary on a treasure trove of unpublished poems by children's book author the late Margaret Wise Brown, perhaps best known for her classic Goodnight Moon.
Margaret Wise Brown died in 1952. At the time of her death, there were many unpublished works that went back to her sister Roberta. Roberta put all these papers in a trunk and put them in the attic of her barn in Vermont, where they sat for years until Amy Gary, who was a young publisher at the time, had developed a relationship with Roberta and happened to ask her if there was anything that was unfinished, if there was any work that hadn't been published. And Roberta said, yes, and you can have it. And Amy spent a decade cataloging all these works. I mean, some of them were on napkins. Some of them were, it's thrilling to go back and see Margaret Wise Brown's handwriting on some of these papers and the evolution of certain poems. But it had been Margaret's vision to have a radio program for children that came on at noon. And the idea was that it would be an hour of stories and songs that would carry the child into the midday nap.
So the new moon is returning soon from the sun or the moon, and whenever it comes, it'll get here too soon.
Emily Gary and Tom Proud were charged with setting some of the unpublished work of Margaret Wise Brown to child-enticing music.
We had the liberty to choose the poem that we wanted to work with, and then we had the liberty to arrange it the way we wanted. So in some instances, okay, I'll give you a prime example. Goat on the Mountain from the first book. Really, it was five lines maybe. And some of these were really crooked, too. You know, it wasn't like there were four lines and they all, you know, rhyme perfectly in the same syllables. Yeah. And so it was our charge to make it, you know, more than a four-line brief song. So I remember well with that one, we were in my kitchen and Tom said, just sing something. And that's how that one came to be. I just sang something. We would just mess around and see how it felt.
A goat on the mountain, a goat on the hill, drank his little supper and drank his fill. And the goat on the mountain, and the goat on the hill, sleep and the night was still, the stars shone down from the mountain and the hill.
And it just felt good. When I'm left to my own devices, I think I would write more towards the vocal, because 9 times out of 10 I'm the one singing the lead vocal. Tom is amazingly talented in different ways. He's an incredible composer, and I think he's particularly great at coming up with really interesting chord progressions. I think that's one of his greatest strengths. I mean, he's got so many musical strengths, but if I had to speak for him, I would say that he thinks more about the chord progression, whereas I think more towards the vocal line, and that's how we work.
Sterling Publishing has so far released 2 books, both of which contain selections of never-before-published Margaret Wise Brown poems, each poem illustrated by a different artist. And in the front of both books are 12-song CDs. Those poems set to music and performed by Tom Prout and Emily Gary.
Sleep like a rabbit, sleep like a bear, sleep like the old cat under the chair. Sleep like a rabbit, sleep like a bear, sleep like the old cat under the chair.
Wow. Well, we recorded the first one with Jeff Romano in Charlottesville, and the second one we recorded partly with Jeff and partly at White Star with Stuart Myers. And I like to listen to the project as it evolves. Recording is one of my favorite things, so I loved it. Actually, I like going into the booth and the solitude of it and just sort of being alone with the music. Sort of like, okay, here we are. This is the culmination of this. This is the time to make it beautiful. The second book was different in that it wasn't as much a lullaby CD. It was peppier and had different instrumentation. So with the second CD, we brought in some other people, some horns, different sounds. And so in that way, it was different. And, well, the material was different, certainly. She always writes about animals and bugs and nature. But we chose poems that could lend themselves to less of a lullaby sound and more of an upbeat sound. Upbeat is probably the wrong word for that, but less of a lullaby sound, you know.
To where gray clouds go sailing by, above the birds and butterfly, high, high, high in the soft, soft air.
Yes, publisher Amy Gary is Emily Gary's sister-in-law. So, did family come into the collaboration at all?
I think it was, well, I probably put a bug in her ear. I mean, sure, a bug in her ear. I probably did, you know. Yeah, this is a crazy great project, and I promise we'll do it justice. And she, you know, believed us.
You'll find pictures and links related to Emily, Tom, and the whole crew involved in the production of the late Margaret Wise Brown's two new books on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, the Just Pax Fund, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about our News and Information Fund and how you can help out, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at the website, too, including our Refugees in Virginia series. It's all there. And be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and Morning Edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.